Joined now by the play-by-play voice of the Kansas State Wildcats, Wyatt Thompson, who is in his storm chaser vehicle as we speak, ready to report on these storms that are coming to our area. Right, Wyatt?
I used to do that kind of stuff.
Yeah? Back in the day, right?
Oh, boy, yeah. And if you live in Kansas and you know this, I'm not telling you or your listeners anything you don't know, you better be pretty good at it and not be too afraid of things because... Hey, Kansas weather is what it is, man. Let's hope everything goes all right today.
This is a crazy thing, but last night, I don't know where it came from, but my son said to my wife, if you could live anywhere in Kansas, where would you live? And then she replied with the rhetorical question, well, where would you like to live if you could pick anywhere in Kansas? And he said, nowhere, because of the wind. So that was his answer, and I think there's some people that would say, yeah, we're kind of tired of the wind, too, but it does come with the territory.
There's no doubt about that.
You know, one thing that we can tie to the wind is the wind of change, and that happens with college athletics year in and year out, and that is you have players that graduate, and you have to replace those seniors with other players, or kids transfer, or kids get hurt, like we saw last year, the first play from scrimmage with Jesse Ertz. The spring game at K-State over the weekend, K-State got the win and the loss. The purple knocks off the white 35-21. What stood out to you and what players stood out to you watching that spring game over the weekend?
You know what, to be honest with you, Wade, there were a lot of things that stood out. What I would tell you to start with is that I think from Coach Snyder's perspective, listening to his post-game comments, I think the good clear and far outweigh the bad, and that's a good thing. You mentioned change, and certainly we are dealing with some of that, most of it in trying to replace a large majority of our offensive line where we've lost four or five starters. In addition to that, when we got to the spring game Saturday, the one lone returning starter, center Dalton Reisner, didn't play. So what was going to happen? How well could the twos possibly play? And I think the answer is that both of the offensive lines were solid. Not great, but solid. And I think Coach was excited by that. I think it's obvious that all three quarterbacks are healthy and have taken a step forward. And I think we also saw a couple of things. One, enhanced, I guess, depth and talent at the receiver spot. And then having Dante Barnett back at safety is just a huge thing. So that's a lot of things, but a lot of things were happening on Saturday, no doubt about it.
Yeah, absolutely. The quarterback situation, that's always the sexy position for people to talk about when it comes to college football or pro football. And, of course, Joe Huebner had to step in, and I thought he did an admirable job last year and got better as the year went on. Jesse Ertz, of course, was the starter, and then tore up his knee right off the bat. And then there's the talented freshman Alex Delton, who played pretty well in the spring game. So I know Coach Snyder has not determined who his starting quarterback is going to be. He probably will wait close to time. But I'm going to ask you, have you handicapped a quarterback race? Which one did you think performed the best on Saturday?
Well, I think just numbers-wise and results-wise, I think you have to probably lean a little bit towards Joe Huebner. And when this spring camp started, and this is just from my perspective alone, I think a lot of K-State fans had written Joe off, and I don't think you should do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Jesse did win the quarterback battle last August and then was hurt right away and missed virtually the entire year. Alex Delton was hurt in the second game and missed the rest of the year and got his eligibility back through a hardship waiver. So to have those guys back is great, but you know, I really admire what Joe had to go through and went through last year. Then, think about it this way. This is interesting to me because he comes in three plays into the season from scrimmage, plays the rest of that game, starts 11 straight, then doesn't start the bowl game.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody writes him off, and then look what he did Saturday. Combined, he was 21 out of 25 for just over 300 yards and had three touchdown drives. That says to me that he's got some toughness and some competitive fire to him. And in watching the game here live, it is obvious that he has made a lot of improvement on some of the throws that he really struggled with a year ago. Having said that, I think he's definitely the guy that was the brightest shiner of the three, if you will, on Saturday. But that's not to say that the other two didn't do a good job, and I think that's part of why everybody walked away pretty excited, because Jesse was good, especially late. And even though Alex Delton didn't really get into the, you know, leading his team to a score, his numbers were pretty good too. And I've told people, I said, that really wasn't his kind of game, because it was touch football with the quarterbacks, and he's one of those shake and bake guys, and he'd have had probably another 80 yards and
right.
had it not been a touch football game for him. So I think you have to keep everything in perspective, but I think Coach Snyder was really happy with all three guys.
Yeah, I didn't have a chance to see the spring game, but one of the knocks on Joe Huebner, and he knows this and you know this, is that he wasn't very effective on those short throws or those swing passes. Did you see improvement in that area?
Way so, yes. And I think that's the real key. Not only did we see improvement, I think you even take it a step farther than that. Stan mentioned on the air Saturday during the broadcast that it looked pretty simple in what he was doing. I mean, you can tell that he's worked on his release and his shoulders, his arm placement, his footwork. I don't think what he did is by accident. This kid has been challenged. He doesn't, you know, I guess that's what I'm saying. I really appreciate him, because it'd have been easy to, after playing all that time and not, you know, getting but barely a sniff in the bowl game, to come back and do that says to me, hey, I may not win the quarterback battle, but it's not going to be for me not trying, man. I'm going to give it everything I've got, and I appreciate that.
Well, there's two ways to face adversity, as you know, and that is he could easily have just hung his head and pouted that he didn't get to play much in the bowl game, and then just, you know what, I'm not going to play. I'm going to transfer. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. Or I'm going to sulk all this season. Or you take it as motivation, say, you know what, I'll show Coach Snyder, I'll show this staff that I should be the starting quarterback, and it sounds like that's the tack that he took.
Well, it's perfectly said, Wade. And on top of that, I've said this to a lot of fans, and whether they want to hear it or not, it's the reality. Yes, he struggled at times last year. There's no secret to that. Nobody's trying to deny that. But again, what he has done, I think, you know, since then is exemplary in terms of the work ethic and getting better. But if you fairly judge this, those 11 games that he started is basically 10 more than anybody else he's competing with.
Yeah.
At some level, that's got to mean something.
Yeah.
And I think it means something to Joe. There's no doubt about it.
I agree with you. Wyatt Thompson, the play-by-play voice of the Kansas State Wildcats, our guest today on the Sports Ticket, brought to you by Crossroads Bar and Grill in Downs. Well, you talked about the receiving core, and certainly that was a bright spot on Saturday. Tell us about the Pringle and the Sutton kid. Pringle, a sophomore. He's going to have 3 years eligibility. That's terrific. And then and Sutton's a freshman. That definitely makes you excited about what they can do in the passing game.
Well, it does. I think everybody was expecting big things from Byron Pringle, and I think they got big things, and that was really, really exciting. I think K-State has been looking for a difference-maker wide receiver. No knock on anybody, but I think they've been looking for one since number 16 Tyler Lockett left here and went to the NFL and was an all-pro in his first year. Byron was good Saturday. He had the 73-yard touchdown catch, 9 catches overall for 163 yards, and you can see at 6'2 and 212 that he's got, you know, some size, some strength, and some athletic talent. But it wasn't just him. I think you look at, you know, several other young guys. You mentioned Corey Sutton. Corey was really good. I thought Isaiah Zuber, who redshirted a year ago, did a good job. Denzel Goolsby had only one catch, but it was maybe the best catch of the day. All of those kids, and I could name more. Colby Moore had just one catch for 4 yards, but he's gotten better. Tight end Blaze Gannon did a nice job. Zach Reuter, who got a little bit of a sniff on the field last year, had 3 catches, including one for a score. So I think what we're saying here basically is just twofold. One, there's more depth, and two, this is much needed. Much more athleticism, too, and that's huge.
One of the problems with Kansas State last year, certainly at times, was who's going to be the future running back, and really, it was Huebner. I mean, he was the guy that was basically the featured back, and I remember the game against TCU where he carried it over and over and over. How does the coaching staff feel about their running back situation? You've got Charles Jones, you got Justin Sillman. Is there anybody else that we should be looking at that can compete for and get some carries this season?
Yeah, probably the third guy is Dalvin Wormack, and the reality of it is, if – I'm just being honest about this. I really think Charles Jones is still the number one guy, but the lead is slight. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's a lot of separation in the three. They all bring something a little bit uniquely different to the table, and I think that's a good thing. Coach Snyder, as you know this, he loves the competition part of it. Mm-hmm. Those guys are competing and doing a good job. They weren't great Saturday, but part of that was a young and inexperienced offensive line for both the purple and the white. But the way I choose to look at it is that, you know, Charles Jones has been around. He's scored a lot of touchdowns. He has been in big games. Justin Silman got a taste of it last year. So did Dalvin, especially late. And I think they're in decent shape there. Winston Dimmel, our starting fullback and an all Big 12 guy from a year ago, didn't play in the game. And I think when you, I'm just, again, being totally honest with K-State fans here, we all know how this goes. It's pretty vanilla. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right.
I think when we get to the real season in the fall, and they cut it loose a little bit, I think you're going to see all three of those guys have an opportunity. And so that battle is going to be big.
So let's focus on the defensive side of the ball. We talk about the quarterbacks played well, running backs were solid, receivers are pretty impressive. But when you have a lot of success on offense, that means the other side didn't have as much success.
Right.
Let's talk about the defense and what were some of the bright spots on the defensive side, and then what concerns do you have coming out of the spring game?
Well, let's start with the strengths. And I think, as I mentioned earlier, having Dante Barnett back for a second senior season, and he was hurt in the opener a year ago, is just monumental. I've told people this for several months. I don't know that I've ever been around a season like last year where you lose the quarterback of your offense and the quarterback of your defense in the opening week. Mm-hmm. That was a monumental blow for K-State defensively. So to have Dante back is a really big deal. So I start with that. The next guy up would probably be, without question, Jordan Willis at left defensive end. He is a big, strong, tough guy who had a breakout season last year with nearly 10 sacks, I think 15 and a half tackles for loss, 4 forced fumbles, really, really solid player. And he's a better player today, in my opinion, than he was at any time a year ago. Coach Snyder doesn't say a lot about some guys. When he talks about the consistency of Jordan Willis, I certainly listen. He's a really, really fine player. So I think it's obvious that those two guys are the leaders of the pack. I think Coach is really excited about the fact that we didn't lose any linebackers and there's more depth there. Where would be the concern? Well, going into spring, I think it was probably without a doubt trying to replace Travis Britz at the defensive tackle spot. And I think Craig Settles and Trey Deshaun did an admirable job in the spring. We've got a community college player coming this summer in Raymond Price that they hope will be a guy. And then the other corner spot opposite Duke Shelley, I think, is probably the biggest question mark. Duke can play. They had to take the red shirt off of him last year because of injury, and he really responded, started the last 8 games. Really fine football player. I think he's got a chance to be an all-league guy at some point, and he's still very young. Jonathan Durham was the main guy with the ones in the springtime. He's a redshirt freshman, but we've got 2 guys coming in the summertime that I know the coaches are excited about. One of them is a Cal transfer, a grad transfer in Cedric Dozier, and then B.J. Reed from Cerritos Community College. So you hope that can be shored up a little bit. And if that is the case, I think you even with Saturday, I think you feel pretty good about where the defense is at. Perfect? No. Better? Yeah, I think so.
Have you already looked at the upcoming schedule for this year? And have you circled a few games on it? I mean, for crying out loud, you open the season. This is just so not K-State. And that is going to Stanford on a Friday night, which you know how I feel about this. I do not like college football games on a Friday night. I think that should be high school.
Right.
College can have Saturday. They won't have Sunday. They can have any other day of the week for all I care. But Friday night, it makes it tough on those that do cover high school that want to watch K-State play. And then after the high school game, we're going to go back. Somebody's going to ruin it and tell us who won, who lost. And then we have it all recorded on DVR. And then we're like, are we going to watch it? No, they lost. Oh, well, I'm not going to watch it. Oh, they won easily. Well, I'm not going to waste time watching it. But having said all that, it is what it is. K-State at Stanford, Friday, September 2nd. You talk about a big test right off the bat to see where you stand. Do you personally like this test that early, or would you rather be looking at it as, okay, Florida Atlantic, Missouri State, then maybe have that test? Where would you like to preferably have that test? Game one, game two, game three in the non-con?
Well, let's put it this way, Wade. You know me a little bit. I've been at Kansas State. I'm as fortunate as anybody around. I've been at Kansas State for 14 years, 11 of that with Bill Snyder. And I may not be the quickest learner in the world, but I've learned over the course of time with him that's not really how you do it.
Yeah.
You kind of somewhat ease into it, if that's the right way to say it. I believe when I first got here, he was still being criticized at that point of how he scheduled.
Yep.
And here's the reality. Everybody on the planet is scheduling like he does now.
Mm-hmm.
This is I choose to say it this way. This is special circumstance in that we had what we thought was a game scheduled for here that fell through because of circumstance. Then K-State kind of had to get into scramble mode there. We couldn't really get a home game. So this was kind of one of those deals. I'm like you. I think the high school should be on Friday night, and the colleges should play Saturday. Maybe a Thursday night would be okay, but not Friday. I'm with you there. But I think this is a one-time thing for K-State. If it happens again, call me and say, I told you so, you were wrong. But I think this will be a one-time deal, and I think it is a very difficult way to go. Here's back to the original first part of your question. Have I looked at the schedule? Yes. And here is the most troubling part. If you follow the Big 12, and many of your listeners do, okay, after Stanford, think about K-State's conference road schedule and who you think some of the best teams in the league will be. We play at Oklahoma, at Baylor, at TCU, at West Virginia, at Iowa State. Mm-hmm. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
That's killer.
Mm-hmm.
It's really hard, especially Oklahoma, TCU, Baylor. Those three teams will be three of the top four teams when the preseason poll comes out. So have I noticed? Yeah, I have.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing that you mentioned earlier, and I'll be interested to see how Coach Snyder approaches this, because you know as good as well as I do, and K-State fans know this over the years with Coach Snyder, is that you talked about the spring game, keeping it vanilla. Well, K-State many times in that first game of the year, a non-con, keeps it extremely vanilla. And some people say that's why they lost to North Dakota State a few years ago. They kept it too vanilla, whatever the case may be. But Stanford, you keep it vanilla against Stanford, that might not end well. Do you think that Coach Snyder is going to approach this, I would think he would, a little bit differently since it's Stanford?
Oh, yeah, you have to, yeah. Wade. And let's be honest and let's give credit where credit is due. Coach Shaw has done a great job out there.
Oh, yeah.
They have a wonderful football team. They lost a pretty large portion of that grouping, including their starting quarterback, but it must be a wonderful thing to be able to promote and have Christian McCaffrey back, who probably will be the Heisman favorite when we get there September 2nd.
Should have been the Heisman winner last year, in my opinion, too.
In my opinion, I would certainly agree with Wade on that, 100%. They'll be in the top 10 is the point, and they've had back-to-back-to-back top 10, top 15 recruiting classes. He's done an amazing job there, and people on the West Coast have noticed. Clearly, they'll be a top 10 team. So you'll have to cut it loose a little bit just to compete, because they're, you know what they do? You've noticed, I'm sure. They may not be what I'll describe, and this is no disrespect to anybody, but they're not really, you know, flash and dance like Baylor.
Right,
they're more of a line it up and kick your fanny kind of kind of bunch, like the old fashioned guys. You know what I mean?
Yeah, physical.
So it'll be a very physical, tough football game from my perspective.
To me, they're clearly the most physical team in the Pac-12, and I think that's part of the reason why they've had a lot of success too. They do it a little bit differently. I want to ask you about Cody Whitehair. They're all the mock drafts, not all, but some, like right one I have pulled up in front of me, are projecting the draft is Thursday night, the first round, and then Friday and Saturday, that Cody Whitehair would be the 26th pick going to the Seattle Seahawks, which would be interesting because number 16, Tyler Lockett's with the Seahawks. What are you hearing about? I mean, it sounds like, and I've seen this on the national shows too, that a lot of people are raving about Cody and his prospects of the NFL and that he's the best rated guard out there.
Well, let's assume for a moment that that is so, and I believe there, I'm not talking about me now, I believe there are a lot of people that really know football and follow it at that level that know what they're talking about in saying that he's the number one guard available. That tells you that he will probably be a late first to maybe middle second round choice, which is high level money, and when you are drafted like that, most generally speaking, you are expected to come in and start from day one.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, I believe that's what those kind of people believe that they're going to get out of Cody. Now, the downside for him is not a lot of people like picking offensive guards early, but I still think because of his skill level, I'll say it another way. I think this is a guy, if he stays healthy, will play in the league 9, 10, 11, 12 years, and be a starter from day one. He's smart. He's tough. He's a lot better athlete than people know. He's versatile. I think he could even be an NFL center, but certainly he can be a guard. And he'll do everything right. It'd be pretty cool if he went up to Seattle with Tyler Lockett, don't you think?
Yeah, that'd be awesome. That'd be really easy.
Yeah, I think it would too.
The Seahawks would become the K-State fans' favorite NFL team. Like.
Well, maybe isn't it? Well, of course, you got a lot of Packer fans there with Jordy.
Yeah, true. That's true. Yeah. And he'll be back, yeah. And hopefully stronger than ever this year. Wyatt Thompson.
Yeah. I missed him last year, didn't you?
Oh, absolutely. And man, that was crushing to see him get hurt like that. Wyatt Thompson, the voice of the K-State Wildcats, our guest today on the Sports Ticket, brought to you by Crossroads Bar and Grill in Dallas. I want to touch upon two more things before we get to our off-the-wall questions, Wyatt. One, the John Curry, the athletic director of K-State, extended to 2022. They tack on 2 years to his contract. Was that something? It seemed like for people on the outside, a lot of K-State fans I've talked to are a little bit surprised at that extension. Some people have been critical of it. They've said, well, that doesn't make sense. Other people have said, well, that shows that there's more stability there. And I think one of the biggest concerns that some K-State fans have that I've talked to is that you have an outgoing president, so you don't know who the next president's going to be on a permanent basis. Of course, we know about K-State, not all K-State fans, but there are many of them that would have liked to have seen Brad Underwood be the head coach instead of Bruce Weber at K-State. And then there's, of course, been the, do we want John Curry? Who, I hear this. This is kind of what I hear all the time. I like John Curry. He raises lots of money for university. That's great. But I don't want him to hire our next basketball coach or our next football coach. And, of course, we know that Bill Snyder, who knows when he's going to step away, and he wants his son to be the coach. There's no secret about that. So I guess my question to you is, you know, John Curry, his situation, he is being extended. Was that something within Kansas State University that was widely expected, or has that come as somewhat of a surprise? And what's the reasoning to extend him when he was already signed through 2020?
Well, you covered a lot there. I guess simply stated, what I would tell you is, was I surprised by it? Yes, I was a little bit. Why would you do it? I wonder if stability wouldn't be the proper answer here,
mm-hmm.
just based on the fact that you are losing a university president, and I'm partial, I understand that, but I think who is a very, very good man, B, a bright, bright guy, and C, an important to K-State athletics, a very pro college athletics guy who mm-hmm. was involved all the way up to the NCAA level. That's a hard blow. But John has kind of been there by his side. Maybe that was part of it. I certainly don't, you know, I don't certainly have all the answers.
Sure.
And you said a lot there, but I think maybe that was it. And in visiting with John about it, I think it was for him more about the stability of the years than the money.
Yeah.
There really wasn't any more money to it. It was just extended out a couple more years. Now, all of the other stuff, I'm not trying to be funny. I understand that there are some people out there that love Brad Underwood. I'm one of those people. But again, I'm not trying to be funny, but if you can't go hire Brad Underwood when you already have a coach. I'm just being honest.
That's true. You would have to let him go before you got somebody else. Yes.
Well, sure, and I believe, you know, based on, you know, the way this shook down—not this past season, but the way the year before ended, where there was some turmoil and there needed to be some change.
Right.
That you have to, you know, you have to give him a little bit of leeway to rebuild.
Yes.
I believe he did a pretty good job with that. Some people will disagree with me on that, and I can appreciate and understand that. But let's be honest. If we're really cutting to the chase, I think it needs to be said, and it's an obvious statement, this next year will be very big for Coach Weber.
Yes.
No doubt about it. Timing may, you know, Brad Underwood, would he have loved to come to K-State? Of course, no doubt. He'll always be a K-Stater. But I just don't think the timing was right. I learned a long time ago doing this, you never say never.
Right.
I think the people that say, well, the window of opportunity is closed there, I don't know if that's necessarily so. The old cliche that I've always heard is that contracts are made to be broken. I don't know if you agree with that or not, but I believe I've seen it quite a bit in the 30, almost 40 years I've been doing this. So the end of the day, K-State needs to have a really good run in basketball next year, and I think they're capable of doing that. And when I say good run, I mean be an NCAA tournament team and have a really good year. Bruce knows he's needing to do that. That's no secret.
Well, a lot of the top players, there were a lot of seniors this year in the Big 12, some of the best players in the conference. And so there would be, I think, the opportunity for K-State to definitely move up in the standings. And this is just my two cents worth, and this is just my opinion, but I've been consistent with this all along, is that when Bruce Weber, when they cleaned house, in essence, and players left, Marcus Foster and all this, that if K-State was going to make a coaching change, that would have been the time to do that. Now,
sure.
Once they didn't do that, my feeling was, you're now going to do a reboot, as I call it, a rebuild. You're giving him a second chance to rebuild things. He did. He was coach of the year in the conference, won a conference championship his first year with KU. And I'm sitting here going, if you're going to give him 1 year, you've got to give him two, don't you? And so to me, if you're going to get rid of Bruce Weber, that was the time to do it when you clean house. But now's probably not the time to do it. And I've heard, well, Brad Underwood, he's such a hot commodity and we got to get him now. Well, I would have argued if you were going to get Brad Underwood, you should have got him the year before. And I'm, you know what I'm saying? Do you get my point on that?
Sure. So. Yeah, absolutely. And frankly, I don't have any issue at all with what you're saying. To me, I understand it. I really do. You know, Brad was here with Frank Martin, as you know, who first came with Hugs,
right.
and then was here with Frank. The irony of all this is that maybe some have forgotten, maybe some have not. John Curry was very hopeful that Brad would stay, but he elected to go with Frank Martin, and, you know, kind of it's played out the way it's played out. I'm really, you know, I'll say this. I said it before, I'll say it again. Brad Underwood is a K-Stater. He loves Kansas State. I know him well. I consider him a good friend. I would hope that he would consider me one. I think he would probably tell you he'd give his left arm to coach here. But the timing wasn't necessarily what it needed to be. And, you know, he's been afforded a great opportunity at Oklahoma State, and I think he'll do well there. But I think Bruce Weber still has a chance to do well here.
Yes.
But he, you know, time is of the essence now, and he knows that. He's been around the game a long time. It's it's all about winning games, and
yeah,
that's just kind of, you know, KU will be great. There's no doubt about that. They always are. The signed the number one player in the country.
Yeah.
They're going to be really good. After that, you can really start to. I mean, we could talk all day about this.
Yeah,
but
West Virginia will be probably decent.
There are opportunities for Kansas State to make a big jump. Let's
Absolutely.
Just say it that way.
Yep.
Am I guaranteeing it? No, but I think they have an opportunity to make a pretty good jump with pretty good young basketball team.
I agree with you there. And, of course, you know, the thing that really hurt K-State fans is that Brad went to the Big 12 and he's at Oklahoma State. That's the one that's going to really hurt, especially if they go head-to-head and Oklahoma State beats K-State two or three times. That's really not going to help Coach Weber's cause. You know that. I know that. But at the same time, I think they both can be successful next year and both do well. But I will say this. This is my bold prediction. I don't even know if it's bold, but I think at some point in time, Brad Underwood will be the coach at K-State, whether it's 10 years from now, 20 years from now, three years from now. I would think he's going to be the head coach at K-State at some point in time.
Well, it could happen, and I think I know Brad Underwood well enough that I can say this to you and say it to your listeners. I think Brad would be the first guy in line to say life's going to be a little harder for him now winning games in the Big 12 as opposed to the Southland.
Yes.
I don't think he's going to go whatever he was in 3 years in the Southland, 55-1 or whatever the hell it was. He's not going to do that in the Big 12.
No.
Right.
I guarantee that.
I'm not saying he's going to fail in Stillwater. That's not what I'm saying.
Right.
But this is he did a great job there. We saw them beat a really good Big 12 team, and you could make an argument that they maybe could have won the next game. Was it Notre Dame? Right.
Yeah. Right. Lost on tipping.
I loved their team. I loved the way they played. Mm-hmm. God, they were so much fun to watch, and Walker was a terrific talent. Even though he didn't look like much of a player, he could play.
But here's the thing about Coach Underwood is that if he doesn't do well at Oklahoma State, if things just go off the tracks and it doesn't go well and it's just a horrible, horrible mess, all of a sudden K-State fans probably aren't going to be as vocal, obviously, saying that's the guy we want to be our next head coach. And I think what you're kind of saying, I'm reading between the lines here, is that he did great at a smaller conference. You can't argue with that. But this is going to be his proving grounds if he can do it at the big boy level, as we call it, in the Big 12.
Well, that's well said, Wade, and that is what I'm saying. And Brad knows. I mean,
sure.
That's the thing. I have not talked to him personally since he got the job, but I will at some point. I've congratulated him through text messaging and that kind of stuff. And when he left here, he's just always going to be my friend. I'll say it that way.
Sure, absolutely.
So I'm from afar, I'm rooting for him, but maybe for different reasons than others.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
But I think he will do well there.
I do too.
But I'm just trying to say that this will be a little higher mountain to climb than dominating in the Southland. That's all I'm saying. No more, no less.
Yep, absolutely. Okay, Wyatt, before we let you go, time for off-the-wall questions. We kind of have some quirky things here that we ask our guests. So here we go. Number one, how many bananas do you eat a day?
If I average it out in a week, I'm going to say about 3. I've been trying to eat a little healthier this spring, to be real honest, so that number has gone up since I talked to you last. So
you eat 3, on average, eat 3 bananas a day?
No, a week.
Oh, a week. I was going to say, holy cow, man, that's 21 bananas a week. I can do the math on that. Man.
I eat an orange a day. How about that?
Okay,
Or an apple.
Okay, so 3 bananas a week. Okay, I'm with you.
Yeah.
The reason
I
ask that is because you and I are both gorillas. I'm a Pitt State gorilla. You're a Solomon gorilla. And so the next question I have for you is, how many bananas does a gorilla eat in a day?
Where do you come up with this stuff?
Dude, I have too much free time.
I'm going to say, and this is just off the cuff, without giving it any thought, I'm going to say 15.
Sounds good. I have no idea. I just wanted to see if you knew the answer.
It could be 2. I have no clue.
I tried to find the answer for that in prepping for this interview, and I couldn't really find it. But I will tell you, an adult male gorilla may consume more than 40 pounds of vegetation per day. So if you're trying to watch your weight, Wyatt, that would not be advisable to do what that gorilla does, okay?
Yeah, that sounds like a lot to me. That's 40 pounds is a lot.
You know, if they put 18 kilograms, that doesn't sound bad. And then it says 40 pounds in parentheses. I'm like, oh, yeah, that doesn't seem very good. And finally, I'm going to kind of cheat a little bit. I asked a similar question of Brian Haney. We had him on the show last week. And Brian's a great, great guy. And, of course, KU grad, so K-State fans don't hold it against him. And so I asked him, I kind of put him on the spot because there's certainly been rumors that he might come back and be the voice of KU. And I said, okay, here's my off-the-wall question for you, Brian. Who would win in a mascot cage match, the River Red or Raider Red, whatever it's called, or Big J and Baby J? And I said, then you take away the gun, now who would win? Yeah, and he was like not ready for that one. So
I'm sure not.
Yeah, right. So what I'm doing with you is I'm stalling to give you time to think about this, because here's my mascot question for you. In a cage match, who would win? Okay. The gorilla, whether you want to take the Solomon gorilla or Gus the gorilla from Pittsburgh State, versus Willie the Wildcat.
Well, I'd have to say Willie on that one.
I
really am, right or wrong.
You have to, don't you?
Well, I think so. You know, after I'll have wrapped up 14 years here and start number 15 the 1st of July.
You want another 15, right? You want another 15?
Yeah,
yeah.
I think it's just the right answer.
if you read Wyatt's contract, it says he must answer it that way. He was prepared for that question. No, I just thought it's funny because the gorilla is a very rare mascot. I mean, it's very, very, very rare. So
yeah,
it's very cool.
You know what? I was always of the opinion that it was really kind of a cool thing until I got a little bit older.
Uh huh.
I'm not sure. I think it's as cool as I did when I was a kid and was going to high school there.
Right.
A lot of people think it's kind of dumb, but I'm proud of it, to be real honest.
I'm going to say I'm proud of it, I'll pound my chest just like a gorilla will, because it's pretty cool.
Sure.
That and that huge inflatable Gus the Gorilla they used to have at Pittsburgh State, it would be
I'd
up
be
behind.
I'd be disappointed if you didn't do that.
Yeah, you remember that? Do you ever see that? They had big Gus the Gorilla, inflatable gorilla. He was huger than life, almost taller than the stadium, and they would have that behind the goalpost, behind the track.
Sure.
And then eventually it got to the playoffs, and they said, NCAA said, no, you can't do that. That's distracting. You can't have it. And I don't think they even do that anymore, to be honest with you, because of that. But
I do remember the days when they did that, though, and I'm certainly older than you and go back a little farther than you, but I will tell you, one of the best small college, probably the best small college football game I ever saw was back in the mid-80s with Fort Hays State and Pitt State, when Coach Fran was at Pitt State. And I think it was 54-46. I'm talking football now, not basketball.
Wow, that would have been a fun game.
Yeah, and at that point, Fort Hays State had an All-American quarterback by the name of Robert Long. That was a heck of a game.
Mm, man, there's some good football.
Yeah, I think they had gorillas everywhere, as I recall, back in those days. What would that have been? Maybe 84 or 85, I think.
Yeah, those were good years for Pitt State when I remember back.
Mm-hmm.
But that was when I was really young, and that's about the only time I can say I was young. Hey, yeah. Wyatt, as always, I appreciate the time. Hope we didn't keep you too long. I always enjoy the conversation, man.
Well, I enjoy it too, man. We'll have to do it again soon. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you. A lot of great K-Staters up in your area, Ben.
Absolutely. We will talk to you during the football season. Thanks, Wyatt.
Yeah, you bet. Good talking to you.
Same here. Wyatt Thompson, voice of K-State Wildcats, our guest on The Sports Ticket.